It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, and iHeartRadio. It is Gil Alexander. Jason Kahn is here, producer number 7. Jason, talking some crazy stuff off air here. Jason, what was your line about the Top Gun reboot? What did you say?
I'm just thoroughly excited.
No, that's not what you said.
I'm not going to remember this.
Something about the world?
Oh, the world needs the Top Gun sequel. No, America needs the Top Gun sequel, okay. I believe.
All right.
I'm really fired
just
up.
Just on some other stuff. Jason, young Jason Kahn, is looking forward to it. On the show today, nothing about Top Gun, but we will have Michael Lombardi. He's a Top Gun himself in the NFL draft. I have questions for Michael here. A week after the incident where Michael audaciously brought up Art Monk in a Julian Edelman conversation. Oh, how dare he. Took me about 5 days to get over that. Brady Cannon will be here. We'll talk Zurich Classic with him. Different format. By the way, Wes Reynolds will be here momentarily. We're going to talk with him about that and also about the Oscars. I don't know how much meat there is on the bone this year with the Oscars, quite frankly. But we'll get the scoop from Wes here momentarily. Jason Weingarten on baseball. Paul Carr off another Premier League winner yesterday. Easy peasy under on Chelsea yesterday. He's got another play. And oh, an update on that whole Super League thing 24 hours later. We'll do that. By the way, a very impassioned speech from James Corden, the late night guy on that, who's obviously English and had much to say. Did like a whole 6-minute rant on that. So we'll get the update from Paul Carr. Josh Towers, also on Major League Baseball. And I have a baseball pick coming up. What am I after the Brewers? That was a coaster yesterday against the Padres. 8-3 on the young season here on a numbers game with baseball preflop. So I've got one play today. It's an afternoon game. We'll give that out here momentarily. Before we get to Wes, real quick, there you go. 8-3 plus 5.19 units on the young season. That's a good start. Very fine, deliberate, picky start to the season. I got one more play today. Last night, by the way, made an additional NFL draft prop play just now. South Point, Chrissy, as promised earlier in the week, South Point put out their draft props yesterday, quietly, did it sort of under the radar kind of thing. And the only thing I bet was, and this is not for everybody because it involves a lot of juice, but under 1.5 tight ends, minus 380, took a little some of that. Under 1.5 tight ends, minus 380. Yes, on NFL draft props, I am more than happy to lay minus 380. It's Kyle Pitts, and then if somebody else gets drafted, tip of the cap, here's your money, South Point. But I'll take the under 1.5 there. Last night, on primetime action, drinking game, first drink, which I do with Matt Brown, Danielle Avari, Kelly Bidlin. We have a ball every night on MSG Plus and on the VSiN side. 4 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Pacific some nights. But last night we're doing the show and we throw it to Kelly for score updates. And, you know, there's four of us, so when one of us is talking, we're multitasking, we're looking at scores. And I had noticed that the Penguins were beating the Devils 6-0. 6-0. I was like, wow, that's interesting. Quite the blowout. And then so, you know, what seemed like a blink of the eye, but obviously it was about 15 minutes later, I guess. Kelly's reading through the scores. He didn't even know that I had noticed this. And he goes, Penguins 7, Devils 5, in like late in the third period. And I'm like, wait, what? Hold on. Wasn't that just 6-0? Sure enough, Penguins were up 6-0 headed into the third. And the Devils just started scoring goals like nuts. Like crazy. And then 7-5. And then about 5 minutes after that, roughly, Las Vegas Chris, who was kind enough to join us earlier on the week on the show, he texts me and goes, oh my goodness, bad beat of the night. And I would even extend that to bad beat of the week, perhaps bad beat of the month, and definitely SVP bad beats warranted. The Devils scored a 6th goal in the final minute. So if you had the Penguins puck line in this, -1.5, -108 was the consensus on it last night. We're showing -1.5, -110. That is brutality. Now, of course, if you're on the Devils, plus a goal and a half, different story entirely. But that is incredible for one of these things that you're not even paying attention to. And all of a sudden you look up. That's the beauty of doing primetime action every night. There's always something you can possibly expect to happen that that does in fact materialize, and that one was just out of nowhere. Penguins end up beating the Devils as -260 favorites on the money line, but oh, the run line doesn't get there, even up 6-0 in the third period. They win it 7-6. All right, let's get to Wes Reynolds. We'll talk some Oscars, some golf, what he's betting today. It's Gil Alexander and Wes Reynolds right here on a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo's Link, Game Plus, and iHeartRadio. He is the co-host of Long Shots and the Swiss Army knife of VSiN, the glue that holds it together. It's Wes Reynolds. How you doing, Wes?
Good morning, Gil. How are you?
I'm doing very well. You weren't on the Penguins puck line by any chance, were you? No.
I was not. I didn't even notice it until I saw it on the highlight because I wasn't on Twitter and following along at the time. I didn't even notice it, but I saw that it was 6-0, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. It was 7-6. So, yeah, a very bad beat. And look, there's a reason, and I'm not saying this is the exclusive reason, but I usually don't like to lay puck line in the NHL. I just usually don't. And I mean, that's not to say that they're bad bets necessarily, but I always get nervous about things like that.
Do you lay run line in baseball at any time, specifically with home teams? Do you ever do that?
Sometimes I actually end up doing what I did with Seattle yesterday, which is taking the run line, especially if they bat last and they're at home. And especially if that's correlated with the under getting bet, where you're seeing the under either get bet or get juiced a little bit heavier, I oftentimes think that gives that more value.
Got there for you. Dodgers only beat the Mariners 1-0. Great performance by Urias for the Dodgers, and really probably the headline of that game, Kenley Jansen throwing 97 all of a sudden. That'll work for the Dodgers.
And got three straight outs.
Yes.
Didn't put anybody on.
Yes. If they have that going, by the way, I was saying last night, our great national nightmare is over. Their losing streak stops at 2. Like, I mean, I wonder what's their, you know, that's what I was talking about, how I know some guys who are actually martingaling the Dodgers this year. Cause they're like, look, if they're only going to lose 30, 35 games, what's their worst losing streak going to be? It's fascinating to watch people do this kind of thing. But if they have Kenley going,
they got two hits yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
They got two hits and one. I mean, if they can win like that, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? So let me preface this segment with you, Wes, as being as sort of like, you know, sometimes things are super bettable. Sometimes things are not. But if they're not, they're worth talking about why they're not. And that might apply to a couple subjects we're going to get into. Let's start with the Oscars, which is this weekend, this Sunday. Not bettable in the state of Nevada, but for those who do have it in their jurisdictions, God bless you and have fun with it. How do you feel about this Oscar market, all the markets in the Oscars? You can go anywhere you want first with this, and just generally this crop of films.
Yeah, and there's only a couple categories that really, I think that there's a little bit of intrigue in terms of the major categories of that we don't know who is going to win. If you look at Best Picture, I'll start there. Nomadland is -670, and that is the favorite. The next nearest price I'm seeing at DraftKings is Trial of Chicago 7 at 6-1. I don't think Nomadland is unbeatable, yet when you look at the Best Director and kind of correlate that, I believe this is the 93rd Oscars, if I'm not, correct me if I'm wrong, might be 92nd or 93rd, but 66 of those have had the Best Director and the Best Director of the picture that director directed also win Best Picture. So that would correlate. And you look at Best Director, Chloe Zhao, who's trying to be the second female director ever to win the award in the history of the Academy Award. Catherine Bigelow was the first for The Hurt Locker back in 2009. She is minus like 3,300 and change to win Best Director. Nomadland is a film that was partially actually filmed right in the state of Nevada. Frances McDormand is nominated for Best Actress at 4-1 in that film. So you have likely the director and the picture are going to go the same way. You have Best Supporting Actor Daniel Kaluuya of Judas and the Black Messiah has swept all the awards, basically, and he is minus 2,500 to win Supporting Actor. Same thing with the late, great Chadwick Boseman, who has pretty much swept for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, except for the fact that Sir Anthony Hopkins did win the BAFTA for The Father. So Boseman did not sweep all the awards. And by the awards, I mean the Golden Globes, the Critics' Choice Awards, the SAG Screen Actors Guild Awards, and also the BAFTAs. So Anthony Hopkins, of course, he's 83 years old. He is an icon in acting. He is from the United Kingdom. So they kind of went their own way. The BAFTAs were kind of the awards this year that went a little bit off the grid and didn't just go with the actors or the films that were winning all the awards, because Hopkins and Frances McDormand won the BAFTAs over there. So really a lot of these categories are chalky, except for Best Actress, Gil. Best Actress is probably the most intriguing category from a betting standpoint, because you have five nominees. The long shot is Vanessa Kirby at 20-1 for Pieces of a Woman, but all four of the other actors in, or actresses rather, in this category have won an award. We talked about after the Golden Globes when Andra Day pulled the big upset for United States versus Billie Holiday. She won the Golden Globe. Viola Davis for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, the movie with Chadwick Boseman, she won the SAG Award. And then Frances McDormand, of course, I mentioned, won the BAFTA for Nomadland. And then Carey Mulligan, who is actually the favorite, won for Promising Young Woman. And she's, I believe, 5-4 to win Best Actress. Viola Davis, 2-1. Frances McDormand, 4-1. And Andra Day, 6-1. So Best Actress, I mean, it is very rare that you have four different award shows pick four different actresses. But here we are.
Any thoughts on who you would bet here in this one particular category then? Do you have a lean?
You know, when I was looking, Gil, and Viola Davis's film, the Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, is not nominated, actually, for Best Picture. So that doesn't mean that she can't win, but it looks like a little bit of an outlier. Same with United States versus Billie Holiday. So you always wonder when you're looking at some of these awards, because some years you get one of those films that sweeps a lot, that wins 6-7 Oscars. And really the only film that's in a position to do that would be Nomadland, which is the favorite for Best Picture, which clearly is going to win Best Director when your director is over minus 3,000. So sometimes you get momentum for a film like that. So Frances McDormand at 4-1 might be somebody I'm looking at. And she has actually won twice here in the past, so she's trying to be a three-time winner. And the Oscars are weird with some of these actors and actresses that never end up winning. I was looking at supporting actress, where the actress from Minari, which I know is a film you saw, is minus 500, and then you have Maria Bakalova from Borat at plus 375. Of course, Ms. Bakalova was famous. He was in that scene with Rudy Giuliani that got all the play in the Borat film. So if you don't know who she is, maybe that distinguishes her. And then Glenn Close, who has never won an Oscar. I believe she is 0-8 in the Oscars in both the main act supporting actress categories. She is nominated at 10-1 for Hillbilly Elegy. So maybe she's the one that can pull an upset, where it's kind of like, okay, is this like the Susan Lucci at the Daytime Emmy?
Yeah, that's a good
year where finally she gets a win, you know, a feel-good story, I guess, for Oscar historians.
That's a good, bold call on that angle, because I'll tell you this, Bakalova's not getting it for the Rudy, for her performance. She was great in Borat, but it's such not the Oscar kind of movie to win a Best Actress, if you know what I mean. They take themselves way too seriously, I think, for that. Interesting. Yeah, and you're right. And generally speaking, that's a great breakdown, by the way, of the whole thing, Wes, because it is very chalky in some of the bigger categories. In Best Picture, as you said, Best Director, Best Actor. It's a chalk fest. Best Supporting Actor. But Best Actress and maybe Best Supporting Actress, those are the two categories to look at as possible dog plays. Las Vegas Chris was here earlier in the week. He thought Andra Day at 6-1 and Best Actress for the United States versus Billie Holiday was worth a shot. You're going more on that in that one with the Nomadland sweep to add with Frances McDormand.
I think that could happen. And look, Andra Day certainly would be worth a bet and worth consideration as well. I think just with this Oscar season, usually we get the Oscars more at the end of March, but obviously because of COVID-19 and you have people from all over the world that are basically accepting these prestigious awards via Zoom meetings, essentially, and via Skype. So you've had this award season really spread out with the Golden Globes, and then you go into the Critics' Choice Awards and the BAFTAs and the SAGs, and then conclude with the Oscars. And then usually Oscar weekend, you have the Independent Spirit Awards as well. So this award season, it's kind of seemed like it's been extended out, and it's obviously been a different award season, not just because of the current environment in which we're in. It's the fact that a lot of these movies, and we talked about it briefly last night,
yeah,
a lot of these movies haven't been seen.
I mean, you said,
I've seen like one of these
movies. I've seen one.
And usually you see maybe, you know, you don't see every single nominee. It's not like I'm getting screeners sent to my house here, but usually I've seen a couple of these, and I just have not seen hardly any of these films.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Minari. In fact, I liked it a lot, but I never thought at one point I was like, oh, best picture, Minari. You know, I never thought that, but an excellent movie.
Right.
But yeah, it'll be fascinating. And, you know, we talked about this a little earlier this week as well. The voting pool has been enlarged. And so when you handicap the Oscars, you have to know that the demographics of the voting group have changed. And so therefore, do you think the votes will therefore change? One thing doesn't necessarily mean the other, but that's got to be part of your handicap as well on this. So should be interesting. Best supporting actress, rather, will hone in on those two categories. Maybe a flyer on Glenn Close there for the Lifetime Achievement Award kind of de facto deal in that category. Let me shift to golf here in our remaining minutes, Wes, because it's a Zurich Classic this week, and this is sort of in the same vein as the Oscars, which is, okay, there's, you know, we can grab what we can from the Oscars. This is a different format. These are pairings in golf. And by the way, here's your piece at VSiN.com. I believe Point Spread Weekly is this as well. Yes, Point Spread Weekly, rather. Friends old and new pair up for New Orleans team event. So can you explain, that's an interesting headline. I know you don't write the headline, but friends old and new. How are these, first of all, explain the format to folks, and then how are the pairings determined?
Some of the pairings they determine randomly on the basis of world ranking, or I guess the PGA Tour priority point system in terms of that. That's why you're usually going to see more high-end players play with other high-end players, with the exception of like if Brooks Koepka were in this and he wanted to play with his brother Chase.
Right.
So you would get something like that, and they could work it out with sponsor exemptions and whatnot. But they went to this event in 2017, this format. You have 80 teams of two players, 35 make the weekend cut. Winner doesn't get a Masters invitation, but does get the full FedEx Cup points and the two-year PGA Tour exemption, invitation to a couple of the other events, Tournament of Champions players and the like. First and third round are called four ball, which is basically the better ball format. And the second and fourth round are foursomes, which are the alternate shot formats, which bettors and viewers will regularly see, obviously, in Ryder Cup formats or in President's Cup formats. So the foursomes are really unique because, obviously, you can do a little more strategy with that, where it's like, okay, I'm really hitting the ball great off the tee, but my approach game is terrible, so my partner can go ahead and do the approach, and then I go ahead and try for the birdie putt, assuming our shots are on the green. So, you know, I like this event. It's a little bit different from the betting perspective, just because it's not the usual thing that we do, where we can model it, we can put this stat in here and that stat in here. So you have to do something a little bit different here, and you're kind of taking some shots and going on hunches. And when you talk about old friends, you get some teams that maybe you're going to play on the basis of how comfortable they're playing with each other, not necessarily whether they're in cracking form or not. So you get a lot of pairings in this tournament where you get guys that may have played like on the same college golf team. I'll give a couple examples. Brendan Todd and Chris Kirk were both on the University of Georgia 2005 NCAA title team. So they're playing together, this team. Victor Hovland is with Chris Ventura. They were both members of the 2018 Oklahoma State National Championship team. Cam Tringali and Roberto Castro, which is a duo I played this week at around 50-1-ish, they were teammates at Georgia Tech. High and all for 36 rounds. And then Castro has limited status now on the tour and is trying to get back his full-time playing privileges, but he's made cuts in the events that he's played here in 2021. So that was one I took a shot with. You look at Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson, who are about 40-1. longtime friends, former neighbors in Lake Nona and Orlando. 6-2 all time as a team in the Ryder Cup. And of course, Rose played very well at the Masters. Maybe he found something there. And Henrik Stenson, who hadn't made a cut all year, actually made the cut there. So maybe they found something. Maybe it's an aberration. But certainly the comfort level between the two will be there.
All right, Wes, as we go out here, repeat the two groups that you played in the end.
Okay, a couple I mentioned, Roberto Castro and Cameron Tregali, Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson. Also had a couple others I played. Danny Willett and Cyril Hatton, 29-1. Max Homa, Taylor Gooch, 33-1. Two long bombs there, Matt Neesmith and Chase Seifert at 90-1. And then Team Boilermaker, the Purdue duo of Tyler Duncan and Adam Shank for 150-1.
There you go. Wes, appreciate it. Like I said at the top, sometimes things aren't quite as bettable as they are in other weeks that might apply, or in other years that it might apply respectively to this week's golf tournament and the Oscars this year. But we appreciate the explanation as to why and the bets that you did make, man. Appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it, Gil. Thanks for having me.
Wes Reynolds, always one of my favorite people to talk to, man. It doesn't matter what subject you throw at Wes, on air or off air. He can deep dive on everything. Hey, you want to talk about 90s R&B, Wes? Sure. It's amazing. Thank you to Wes. We'll come back. My baseball pick of the day. Try to improve on the 8-3 start. Coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
With basketball and hockey games every week, and with the early baseball season, it's time to get into BetMGM Sports Nevada, the premier sports betting app. BetMGM, has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Just download the BetMGM app today. Stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. And start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada, whatever your sport, whatever your betting style. You're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Skill Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate them. Even when they're about random stuff, I was mentioning I bet under tight ends 1.5 here, -380 at the South Point just before the show. Trip Tepper found a historical NFL draft stat that I couldn't believe. He says, 1979 NFL draft, the Saints picked a kicker named Russell Erksleben at 11. Yes, the 11th overall pick was a kicker. For context, Joe Montana was the 82nd pick in the 1979 draft. That's a great tweet. By the way, Russell Erksleben, so if memory serves now on this, because this is a wee tyke at that point. Russell Erksleben kicked like a 67-yard field goal in college for the University of Texas. 67 yards, which may still be the NCAA record. Don't hold me to that. But I think he was also a punter. And so the Saints drafted him at 11. I don't even think he played that long. I think he played like 5 years in the NFL, something like that, and then he was out. 11th pick in the draft. Joe Montana, 82nd. You should check the first round. Who else got picked in the first round? 79. Boop-a-doop-a-doop. Oh, Dan Hampton, Hall of Famer, was fourth. Kellen Winslow, Hall of Famer, was 13th, two picks after Russell Erksleben. Oh, man, that's bad. With the 11th pick, the Saints go Erksleben. With the 13th, the Chargers go Kellen Winslow. Great tweet from Trip on that. Appreciate it. Okay, baseball pick of the day. Flash up the old record here, Jason. I'm 8-3 on the season. Hope you got in on the Brewers yesterday. Corbin Burnes against Chris Paddock. The strangest line of the young season. Just absolutely made no sense whatsoever. And easy win for the Brewers, who went out to a 5-0 lead. There was some luck involved. There was unearned runs, and there was definitely great defense, great defensive play. But by and large, Corbin Burnes did everything we said he would do, which was to dominate that game yesterday. And the Brewers, easy winners. They ended up winning up 6-0. In that one at San Diego. We've had a couple of those that are like massive shutout wins. We're like, well, it won't get any easier than this, and they keep coming here early. So let's just keep our heads down, be humble about it. 8-3 plus 5.19 units. Today, it's an afternoon play. I am going with the, any guesses, Jason, where I'm going here?
Milwaukee Brewers.
Incorrect. I am going with the Houston Astros at Coors Field this afternoon. It's a 3:10 Eastern, 12:10 Pacific start. It's Urquidy against Gomber. Urquidy against Gomber. I'm going with the Astros. When you look into Urquidy, by the way, Paul Spohr is a big Urquidy fan. Every time we talk Astros, he always brings up Urquidy. But, you know, young season for Urquidy. He's doing everything that Spohr imagined he would in terms of advanced stats. 2.26 fielding independent, 3.61 xFIP. And again, you don't want to take too much from a small sample, but this is him realizing his potential. 28.8% K rate to a 6.1% walk rate. So really good. Mainly, though, this is a fade of Austin Gomber for me and the Rockies. Austin Gomber does one thing really poorly that is the last thing that you can afford to do at Coors Field. The worst possible trait you can have as a pitcher in your pitcher profile at Coors Field is to walk a lot of batters. Because Coors Field is a prairie. It has the widest dimensions of any field, obviously, in baseball. The last thing you want to do is put runners on for free. And, well, when you look at Austin Gomber's walk rate this year, it's 20%. Good God. 7.63 walks per nine. Again, just 15 and a third. But I'm willing to bet against that early in a season. Correct it on your own, but I'll bet against it today. By the way, his advanced stats beyond that, terrible too, 5.48 xFIP. And it's not like he's had a good, you know, his good stats in previous season last year in 29 innings. It was 4.75. The other thing is, you have a matchup, and last thing about this, you have a matchup where Houston is facing the lefty Gomber and Colorado's facing the righty in Urquidy. Well, Colorado against right-handed pitching this year, you may be interested to know where they fall weighted on base against right-handed pitching. Out of 30 teams, they're 30th with a 266 weighted on base against right-handed pitching. What are the Astros against left-handed pitching? Glad you asked. Fourth in Major League Baseball, weighted on base at 361. So for all those reasons, the Astros at -142, give me some of that. I will take it. Astros are the play of the day in baseball. Josh Towers, no, don't Josh on baseball. Next, a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To a numbers game with Gil Alexander.
With all the spring sports betting action, you need the VSiN experts to stay ahead of the game. The best place to start is VSiN.com, where we're covering baseball, the NHL, and NBA playoff races, the NFL draft, and every game on the schedule to give you the betting edge. While you're there, get all the latest Vegas odds, check out our bet tracker and parlay calculator tools, read in-depth articles from our team, including betting strategies from basic to advanced theory, and you can also listen to our VSiN shows 24/7 for free. Start your daily betting at VSiN.com, and while you're there, check out our subscription options starting at just $22 per month. It's Gil Alexander. I multitask on this show. Doing a show, that's one thing I'm doing. I don't know if you noticed that, Jason. We're doing a show here. Fielding Top Gun videos from Jason Kahn. He's very excited about Top Gun, the reboot. I'm betting tennis simultaneously. I didn't mention this earlier in the week, but I have a seven-leg tennis moneyline parlay from yesterday into today. This is, and by the way, people are like, you do moneyline parlays in tennis? Yes, I do in early rounds, especially on clay. It's a whole story. I can give you a whole segment on it. But the seventh leg, this is what always happens, right? Comes down to Fabio Fognini, which you know, I was like, of course he's the seventh leg, because you know that's going to be the most harrowing experience. He gets bageled in the first set, down a break in the second, breaks back, breaks to go ahead, and now is flirting with getting broken back again. So you just know it's just going to be a harrowing experience all morning. So please pray for me. That's what I'm saying. Let's bring in Josh Towers, ladies and gentlemen. VSiN host and former major leaguer Josh Towers. How you doing, Josh?
I'm good. Hey, let me ask you, what's the seventh leg of a tennis? How do you bet that? And could you have just hedged the last guy?
I could have hedged the last guy. I could have absolutely hedged the last guy. Ask me if I did, though. I did not.
You're sweating it. Come and say no.
No, I did not. I did not do it. But
that's beautiful.
Because he's by the way, he's the most just absolutely harrowing player. Because he can beat the best in the world and then lose to you the next day. That's how Fanini plays. But let's talk baseball here for a second, Josh. And I'm curious because, again, we preface everything here by saying we're not even 10% of the way through the season. Actually, we're right around 10% now. So nothing is set in stone, for goodness sakes. But if I just point to the AL East, because that's where you played for three different teams. And if I go, and the Red Sox are 12-6 and the Yankees are 6-10. I get that the Yankees are going to come back some, right? No one thinks they're going to stink. Maybe you do. I don't know. But could the Red Sox hold this up?
It's a tough question. See, again, coming in, I thought the Yankees would be, at the end of the day, whatever the records are, I thought they'd win that division, and they still obviously can. Their offense is in a very, very bad place. I've said this many times. The Aaron Hicks, John Collins, Stanton locked into the 3-4 slot, I just don't understand that at all. Neither one of them are productive, and you're putting a value in a spot where you got guys that can't produce that value. So move them around, switch them up. You got to do something. We know the Yankees also will go and invest in somebody if it doesn't work out, but they can't mess around and wait too long. I didn't think Boston would be as good as they've shown us. With that said, they're doing the things they need to do as well to go and get pieces as well. So there's two teams that will go out and buy, and the longer you keep Boston in the spot where they think they can win, and the longer you can put that bullpen in the spot where they start growing confidence, it's going to make them a little bit more dangerous. Do I think it's 162 at this point? No, but again, the longer they linger, the more they will go purchase the pieces they need.
Let's extend it beyond the AL East. Is there a club that you think in the short term has shown you something to make your change your opinion of them for the long term? Like a team that is perhaps a team that you now have changed your mind to the good, or perhaps in the other direction on, where you're like, oh, maybe I was wrong about these guys. They're actually this.
God, because are we talking short term or long term? You know, it's such a tough thing. Again, like some of the divisions, like the Central in the National League, is just a straight coin flip because none of these teams can kind of figure out who they are. You kind of like the Giants. I didn't ever expect them to be even this good.
Uh-huh.
But they're always gonna give themselves an opportunity because listen, they're not small market, but they're not publicized. They don't have the major networks coming in. They weren't expected to be good. They don't have the pressures of anything. They all understand that, like, this is who we are and this is how we play and accept it, please, and they all do. And so now they give themselves an opportunity to be in each and every game. Do I think a Gabe Kapler team this young will sustain a whole season? I do not. But do I think that they're going to be a tough team for past the All-Star break? I do think that. So you get teams like that that have an identity and they accept it, where you got other teams that are supposed to be good and held to higher standards that are having a hard time living up to it, like let's say the Phillies right now. I mean, there's inconsistencies. You know, it kind of throws me off a little bit, Gil. There's three teams that have a plus run differential and they have an under 500 record. I mean, that's stuff that has to be addressed quickly in the locker room.
I'm so glad you brought up the Giants. I even said to Mark Borchardt yesterday on the show, I'm like, perhaps you didn't factor in enough Giants magic into your model. They are 11-6.
Well, again, they do the little things. They put the ball in play. The pitching has done a fantastic job, and they have guys on their staff that people had counted on big time in the past that didn't get it done. Well, you know, maybe we've all had bad seasons and came back and have good seasons. Maybe it's they figured some things out, the Sanchez and the Gosmans. We'll see long term, but who knows?
Yeah, third best record in baseball as it stands now, 11-6 for your San Francisco Giants. We got a couple minutes here, Josh. Are you betting games yet this year, daily?
Yeah, I am. I haven't locked in like a ton, but I do kind of find a game here or there each day that I like, and if I have the time to run over, I definitely do, yeah.
What do you like today?
So, I was kind of looking at some stuff. There's a lot of temptings. I haven't officially committed to too much today yet, but I will. I do like the way Richards for Boston has pitched after opening day. I think he's starting to find it, and it's going to take a little rhythm, so I'm into that. The Mets-Cubs game is more of a stay away. Both the guys are, you know, Davies not so good. Peterson was good last time, and with those two clubs, it's tough. I like the Nationals. I haven't seen their line at all. I don't know what it is. I can imagine they're favored heavily. Martinez just hasn't seemed to figure out anything from the past. I don't
minus
know.
-160. Yeah, -160 on the Nats now. It came down actually.
Yeah, better than I thought. You know, it is. You know, I guess we can consider it a day game, so you got to be careful with Scherzer giving up a home run in the first in day games. But I don't know if I can trust the Cardinals. And I think Max has been pitching pretty good. He needs some run support. You know, we just talked about the Giants. I like Eflin. I think that he's been doing well. So I would lean toward the Phillies a little bit. Dangerous. You know my take on the Orioles, so we always stay away from them. And, without knowing who, and I haven't seen who's pitching for the Pirates yet, and I don't like doubleheaders where teams take both games, but I do favor Tigers in both games currently.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, we don't have pitchers listed for the Pirates yet, but Fulmer in the first for the Tigers, Turnbull in the second. All right, Josh, appreciate it, man. Always a pleasure, and hope to see you around the South Point soon, man.
I'll see you soon. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Josh Towers, everybody. At No Don't Josh on Twitter. Let's talk some Premier League. Off a winner yesterday, easy peasy, Chelsea under. Paul Carr joins us. Oh, and a 24 hours later update on that whole European Super League thing. Just around the way right here in a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. BetMGM welcomes you to Showtime with a chance to win $100 for a $1 moneyline wager on the Clippers or Grizzlies in tonight's game. Just use bonus code VSiN100 and you're on your way to betting with the king of sportsbooks. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com for more details and use promo code VSiN100 to bet $1 and win $100 if either team hits a three, just one. New customer offer, paid and free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia only. Excludes Michigan disassociated persons. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, and Virginia. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. In Tennessee, call or text the red line at 800-889-9789. And in Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. It's Gil Alexander. One thing from the NBA last night that I wanted to mention, because this comes up, I was going to say from time to time on this show, but we actually say it a lot, which is, file away the NBA head coaches that will foul up three late in the game and that will not foul up three late in the game. The answer is you should always foul. We are team foul here on a numbers game. We have always been that. And the one coach that has shown time and time again that he will foul every single time they're up three late in the game. And I'm talking about the final seconds, the closing seconds of a game. And that needs to be said every time, because there are some coaches that just seem to do it arbitrarily. Yeah, sometimes it fouls, sometimes we don't. I don't want to back those coaches in late situations. And I'm talking about for those who are willing to bet in-game really super late. I'll say it again. I've said it before, I'll say it again. If I know you're going to foul up three in the closing seconds of a game, I will lay -2500 on you to win that basketball game. If I don't, if I know that you're not going to foul, I wouldn't lay -150. That's how big of a win probability decision that is in my head. Well, the coach that does it time and time again, every single time, is Steve Nash of the Brooklyn Nets. So imagine, again, all their talent that they hope to coalesce, and there is some doubt now that James Harden will even be back for the first round of the playoffs. They can get away with the first round of the playoffs without Harden. But we're starting to get into that area where if he doesn't show for the second round, things get a little dicey. But the Nets end up beating the Pelicans last night, 134-129. And they do this, and we were following it on primetime action last night, and we had to go. But as we were out the door, I was following it in the car. Yes, I was following it while driving. I apologize. But with 12 seconds left in the game, the Nets are up three. And what do? They go ahead and they foul Brandon Ingram. So up 129-126, they foul Brandon Ingram. 12 seconds left. Ingram hits both free throws. Okay. Then Obviously, the Nets get fouled. They get the inbounds. They get fouled. By the way, it helps when you have a free throw shooter in Kyrie Irving who's north of 90% from the line. Kyrie ends up hitting both. What do the Nets do? Up three, they foul again with 6 seconds left. They're like, all right, you're not going to beat us. We're going to keep sending you to the line. By the way, the Pels make one of two at that point. The Nets get fouled. They make one of two. So again, it's a three-point game. And then, like, the Pelicans had to figure out how to get off a shot without getting fouled the third time. So it really plays in also, it really messes with the other team because they're like, we got to throw a long pass and, you know, we can't play standard basketball. So shout out to Steve Nash, shout out to the Nets, and shout out to everybody who likes to bet really late in game in some of these games. You can always count on the Brooklyn Nets up three late in NBA games. Let's talk about the beautiful game globally, soccer. Coming off another easy winner yesterday on the Chelsea Under. It's Paul Carr, everybody, from True Media Networks. And, of course, the Expected Value Podcast. How you doing, Paul?
Morning, Gil. I'm looking forward on this NBA front to what you're saying. What kind of plays are these teams going to start coming up with?
Yes.
You know, some creativity to, yeah, quick passes, you know, the pacer play that Valpo ran years ago. I don't know what it is, but
yeah,
I'm looking forward to some fun, creative play design to try to avoid these situations.
That's exactly what the Pelicans tried to figure out. They're like, okay, how do we go this long pass to avoid getting fouled? I mean, it makes it fascinating at the end of games, but good on Steve Nash. He absolutely is team foul. He has bought into it. All right, before we get to your pick of the day in the Premier League, let's go back to yesterday real quick because we had this massive story. The biggest story in sports 2 days ago was, or actually was it yet? No, it was 2 days ago. Was this
last 2 days?
Yeah. Last 2 days. Yeah, Super League in soccer globally. All the elite teams were going to break off and form their own new thing on top of everything else. Well, and by the way, you and I texted about James Corden, of all people, you know, who's from England, did this passionate 6-minute rant on his show. And he was even saying the whole time, he was like, I know none of you care, but I've got to talk about it.
It was a really good segment for kind of your casual, for non-soccer fans. Like, my wife watched it and said,
I agree.
That was really good. It went to what we were talking about yesterday about why is this, you know, it rings differently in England than it would in America. And he was able to articulate why, just the way that the clubs have historical roots and communities and things like that. So yeah, I would encourage people to go find his rant if they're looking for a little context on the Super League.
I agree. It totally helped me understand why fan bases got really upset about this. So here we are 24 hours later. Is it Dunzo? Is it DOA?
It's about as Dunzo as it can be. You know, Super League put out a statement that they are reshaping the project.
Oh, reshaping. I love that.
So, and I think I said this yesterday, they'll try again. You know, it'll be 2 years, 3 years, something else will pop up. You know, some other weird thing will happen. In this case, the pandemic, that was kind of the impetus to push it because some of these clubs needed money desperately. So they'll try again. But yeah, for now it's kaput, and nothing's going to change in the immediate future.
Which were the clubs that were the ones that pretty much put a death knell on this?
So Chelsea and Man City were the first, at least publicly, to withdraw. I think part of it's because Chelsea is owned by a Russian billionaire. Man City is owned by oil money as well. So they don't need the money in the way that some of these other clubs do. And once those two are out, the rest of the English clubs were going to follow. And once you lose six of those 12 teams and all of England, it's not going to work. So those are the first two dominoes, were Chelsea and Man City to go, and everything else just fell after that.
Are you happy that it didn't happen?
I think so. I mean, I think if you start playing, the big clubs start playing each other, you know, every week or twice a month or whatever, then it loses some of the appeal. Just like, I can't think of a great example, but maybe it's almost in a little bit like the college football playoff, in the sense the same four teams are always playing each other and some people get a little weary of it. This is different, but it's, you know, a little bit similar. So yeah, so it's not something I was looking forward to. Champions League already exists. That fills that need for me.
Yeah, someone on Twitter, forgive me for not remembering who it was, but they had the college football analogy yesterday, which it's like if Bama, Clemson, and Ohio State said to everybody else, we're going to form our own league. We'll leave one spot open for one of y'all, you know, that kind of thing. It's not entirely unfamiliar to us, but it would have been on a much more global scale. All right, so let's take the Premier League. Before we give your pick here, there's a team that had a change at manager and you're staying away from them?
Yeah, Tottenham got rid of Jose Mourinho. they talk about a news dump. It was buried under the Super League stuff.
Right.
Oh, by the way, they fired one of the most famous managers in the world. So they brought in an ex-player, or kept an ex-player, Ryan Mason, who's one of their interims. So, I don't like touching these new coaches. I know you often hear about the new manager bump, which I think the stats show it's not so much a real thing as usually it's just regression or progression, I guess, back to the team not being as bad as they were. So Tottenham's playing today. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what kind of lineup they're going to roll out, what kind of attitude they're going to have. I guess they'll be less defensive than they were, but it's a stay away from me until I see something.
All right. So Tottenham and Southampton, which is at 10 a.m. Pacific. Is that 10 a.m. Pacific or 10 a.m. Eastern this morning? Anyway, that's the early game this morning. You're staying away from that. But Aston Villa and Man City, which is, by the way, at 12, so that was Pacific, 10 a.m. Pacific, you're staying away from that one. The Aston Villa-Man City game is 12:15 p.m. Pacific, so right around the same time we're used to here. What do you got in this one?
So I'm playing the under here. I'm playing under 2.5. My price is plus 115. This is, as one of your other guests likes to say, a throw-up-in-your-mouth sort of game.
Yes.
it's just, betting any under in Man City game is tough. Like I'd played one early this year and they won 5-0. Like, it's going to happen. That's what they can do. City's explosive. But so they played 32 Premier League games this year. 18 of them have actually had two or fewer goals. This, I've said it a couple times, this is not the explosive Man City we've seen in the past, and that they're always going to blow the doors off you. They can, but they've been much more defensive oriented this season. So I'm playing them at plus 115 to get under 2.5, the total under 2.5. They don't have Kevin De Bruyne, who's one of who probably is their best player and creative force in the midfield. They still have plenty of other talent. This is also a little trap game for City. They've had an FA Cup final last weekend. They have a League Cup final this weekend and then Champions League next week. So there's a pretty good chance they sit a few people here that would normally play and press for goals and such. And Aston Villa is in a little bit of a similar spot. They don't have a ton to play for. A couple of their best attackers, Jack Grealish and Trezeguet, are both out. So I don't think they'll be as potent. And their defense has been, it's a top half defense so far this season. So I see it's like a narrow City win, maybe a 1-1 type of game. And I'll take the under, getting plus money here.
All right. Paul Carr on another under today. May it be as easy as yesterday's, Paul, by the way.
Right. That was a snooze fest. One good chance for Chelsea early on. And I mean, to be honest, I wasn't paying much attention in the second half, which kind of tells you
what a beautiful snooze fest it is. Aston Villa, Man City under is the play today, under 2.5. We have 30 seconds here, 30 seconds to a minute, Paul, but you're a Dolphins fan. What do you want them to do? What should they do?
I don't pretend to know the college players well enough to have a strong opinion, but get one of those three skill position guys at 6. Get Kyle Pitts, get Chase, get Smith. I'm not sure who the best option is there. Kind of like whoever falls to them or they decide to take, I'm pretty good with that, assuming at least three quarterbacks are going to go ahead of them. So whichever one of those gets to them personally, I'll be pretty happy with.
Ian Rappaport reporting the other day they're fielding calls to trade again out of 6.
We'll see. Not
3 to 12 to 6 and who knows what else. Can't wait. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it, man.
You bet, Gil. Have a good one.
You too. Paul Carr, Premier League Soccer all week long. Expected Value Podcast, available wherever podcasts are distributed. By the way, you can find his stuff on ESPN Plus as well. We should mention that. We'll come back. Jason Weingarten, Michael Lombardi, whole bunch of questions for him. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.